So, good evening. Is there anyone here who wasn't here last week? Okay. Make sure there are a couple of handouts over on the table. Make sure you get those. One of them is a meditation that Steve handed out. Next week is the last class of this module, and we're going to combine it with practice day. So we're going to start half an hour early at 6:30, and we're going to go until 9:30. So plan to be here a little bit early and stay a little bit late. I'll tell you right now, our next module, we're going to take a break over Christmas, and our next module will start January 4th, and that will be how to develop, we can watch Steve try to put this on, it's how to develop bodhicitta, and as far as I know, Don Brown is going to be teaching that one. So there'll be a slight delay.
Is this working? Yes. Okay. So, 12 links might have scared a few people off. Sorry about that, everybody. It's hard because we have a lot to try to compress into these four classes, but, you know, we covered a lot of ground last week. So this week, the hope is, what I want to try to do is now make it really practical, really something that you can put into your daily life rather than lists and abstractions and, oh, what's the woman who usually sits over here? What's her name? Yeah, because I had something special for her. Oh, maybe she'll be watching online. Okay, so let's start off with like a 5 to 10 minute meditation. So get into a meditative posture. Hi, come on in. And the most important thing to remember is that your back is straight. And if you're sitting in the chair, make sure your feet are flat on the ground. And everybody's here, been here before once, right? Okay. All right, so just get into that posture. I won't go through all the points because by now you should know the gist of it. And make sure everything is relaxed but alert as much as possible. Your body, you know, not rigid but also not completely collapsed in on itself. So that's why we move the elbows away from the body so you can, your breathing can be freer. Tuck your chin so that the back of your spine is straight. And then keep your eyes closed or gently open so some light comes in and keeps you alert. Sometimes it's hard to be alert at 7 o'clock on Monday after whatever you've been doing all day, but we're going to try. So you're going to put all of your attention on your breathing. And this will bring your mind to a topic, to something, rather than just wherever it wants to go. You're trying to gently rein it in a little bit. Just like when you're learning, you're trying to teach a dog to walk on a leash, you know, you try to be gentle. And then over time, your mind will learn, okay, I'm just going to be focusing on the breath. And then actually, it will thank you because it's going to get a break from all the other gymnastics it does. So you're going to count. And so one inhale, exhale will be one to yourself. The next inhale, exhale will be two. And you can count up to 5 or 10. Whenever your mind wanders, try not to be disappointed or annoyed with it. The fact that you notice that it wandered is huge. That's what this is. This is an exercise in noticing it and then gently bringing it back and then, you know, going back to the count. So I'm going to let you do that and try just to let your mind, watch your mind, watch and see what happens. We'll do this for about 5 to 8 minutes. take a minute to recall why you were first drawn to this class or to Buddhism. What was it that you were, what complication in your life were you looking to resolve or to settle? And take a look at that issue now. And are there other complications that you are focusing on or have moved to that you would like some more wisdom around or more some difference with? And imagine how you would be if that felt better, felt easier, felt lighter and freer. How would that feel in your life? And how would it affect those around you? So before class, then we set our intention. So if you feel like it, then set your intention to be able to do that, to be able to resolve whatever complication you're currently looking at, or one that you would like help with. May the things that you learn lead you to that ability, to that place. Okay, and as you're ready, just open your eyes. Yeah, it's kind of warm. Is anybody else warm? It's kind of warm, right? A little bit of something just... Oh. All right, so last week we were talking about the 12 links and the wheel. We showed the whole wheel thing. Any thoughts about that this week that you want to share? Because I know it's a lot to take in, and there's like, I was thinking like, well... You know, I certainly don't remember each and every detail that I described to you last week. There's certain things that I think are important to remember. Like when I was showing the wheel and talking about Yama holding the wheel represents impermanence. So recalling impermanence is a real foundation of Buddhism, you know. And not to freak us out, but to remind us, to be kind of like a, oh, right, I don't have, you know, forever in this form. But also, I think that there's real power of impermanence. We certainly are aware of the sad aspects of impermanence, but also that things are arising. And if there wasn't for impermanence, then things wouldn't arise. And you have wishes for things that you want to arise in your life. And the fact that they can and the fact that they do is because of impermanence. So when we're looking at the whole wheel of life, recalling impermanence for both reasons. To empower us about what's possible and also to remind us that, you know, time is moving. And then in the middle of the wheel, do you remember the three poisons? Do you remember what they were? What were they?
The chicken.
The chicken, snake, the rooster, and the pig. The chicken. Oh, they're in the same family. Yeah, the male chicken, the snake, and the pig. And the pig was representing ignorance, snake, anger, rooster, attachment, desire, pride. You'll hear varieties. And so it's really important to remember those three. And you'll see, this is what I was trying to tell somebody after class about how overwhelming all these lists can be. And she was telling me, you know, I think I have the core of what I need to have. And I said, that is huge. Then wherever module you go into or wherever class you're taking, see where that core that's important to you or that you're feeling or hearing is, because it will be. You'll hear these three poisons in the next module, and then in the next module you'll hear it in different ways. So in that way the list kind of becomes a little less intimidating, but also different things kind of are important to different people at different times. So whatever drew you to this class, when I just asked that question when you were meditating, that may be something that's not as pressing for you right now. and there might be something else. So one meditation will fit something that's pressing in your life, and the next year it'll be something different. So in DB, I'm kind of giving you an explanation of why we have all these lists and why we're throwing all this stuff at you. But, you know, so that you know where to go to find some of these things, and that you know how to use them. It's like a sampler. I remember when I was in school, and, you know, the teacher would give us this test. This is before the internet, before computers. And half the test was just, where would you go to find the answers to these things? And the whole test was it going to be the dictionary or the encyclopedia or, you know, whatever it was. That's what the whole test was on, so that we would know where to get the information. Same thing with this. A lot of the things we're giving you so that you'll have it and you'll know then where to go. So the Wheel of Life, we did two kinds of meditations on it. One, to look at the big, big picture of all the different realms and how we spin through cyclic existence. And then a smaller picture of just how something that you might be cycling around in your life continues. So that's my little synopsis on that wheel and how to use it. But what I want to do today is talk a little bit more about, I just saw a note of something I was supposed to tell you all. Okay, and the other thing about the wheel is just kind of the stages. The thing that I think is pretty cool about it is we don't really break things down into stages of how we got to this habit or how we are so attracted to something and then it became a problem, right? We just kind of, it just happened. And in that wheel, remember how it showed the stages of contact. Contact you're just going to have because you're a human being. And then the next part, and the next part, and the next part. But actually, contact is something you can limit or reduce. And it's sometimes, Geshe-la's talked about this quite a bit, sometimes you need to remove yourself from an object in order to get some space, in order to have some freedom. That may be the very first thing to do. So that goes back to that first thing of that contact. Maybe you need to reduce contact. So that's, again, why that wheel and how that wheel can be important in your daily life. So, you know, keep going back to it and looking at it and seeing if it's helping you or not. It will increase your mindfulness, which is also in every single module that you'll attend. Okay, so today what we're going to do is look a little bit more at antidotes to some of the issues and complications that arise for us. The pig, the snake, and the rooster. Those complications. What are some antidotes to those critters? And one that, you know, you can use the same process with anyone that's important to you, but since anger is a pretty common one, now it's getting chilly. Is anybody cold? I see sweaters are going. This is the suffering of change, remember? So you'll see in the homework all these lists of 6 sufferings, 8 sufferings, 12 sufferings. But the one that I would say definitely that you can remember are those 3 sufferings that we talked about in the very beginning. The suffering of suffering, which is the suffering that all sentient beings experience. A donkey, you know, if it hurts its hoof, paw, whatever, it will be in pain. The headaches we have, that's the suffering of suffering. Then the suffering of change. It's hard to get comfortable. I'm too hot, I'm too cold. Or something that you really like. If you kept eating that chocolate cake all day, you would be throwing it up. So that's the suffering of change. And then pervasive suffering, which gets a little more complicated, but it's basically because we are beings in this form, you know, we are going to be experiencing suffering. That one gets a little more complicated, and we'll go back over it again to next week when we have more time. So the antidotes then. Anger is one that's pretty easy to start with. What I want to do is walk you through a very typical Buddhist meditation on developing these antidotes so that you can do this with anything that you're working on in your life. I'm just going to use a little bit different language. But typically what happens, and we're going to create it together. I'm not going to give you a list, but there are lists. So if you want them, they're there. So if you're meditating on anger, the antidote to anger is patience. And I remember when I first heard these things, I was like, well, yeah, but, you know, how do I get that antidote? You know, the anger to jealousy is rejoicing. It's the flip side, but then it seems to me way too easy, and it is. So that's why than these meditations. So you take patience, and basically in Buddhism there are lists of the advantages of patience and the disadvantages of patience, and you meditate on those. But we're going to create our own, since it'll probably be pretty much the exact same one, and this one you'll remember because it's yours. So let's start with just thinking about in your own life something that is easy, you know, not the worst, worst of the worst, but am I here? Okay. Something that is easy to aggravate you. It's easy to get on your nerves, you know. I can think of a situation at work. I'm sure you can also. A situation somewhere in your life that's kind of easy to hit those buttons for you. And so then the antidote to that becoming a problem is patience. But keep your mind on whichever one that you want to. And what we're going to do is start to look at the disadvantages of losing your patience. The way that I think is a pretty cool way to make this list is to start, so we're going to look at impatience. I'm just going to abbreviate it. Can you see that? Can you see that, Brian? On the no? I don't. Oh, here's black. I finally found it. I just saw lots of red and green, but what? Okay, so here's impermanence. I mean, impatience, impermanence. They have the same initials. Okay, so impatience. What, when you think of impatience, what does impatience support? What does impatience lead to? The foundation of impatience creates or leads to or supports other things. Okay. And you can use your example, your own example, to create this list. It's like
mistakes.
I'm hearing a lot of them very softly because I can't hear all of them. Stress.
Would be the word for hurting others.
Yeah, causing harm. Others. And that probably has a huge subcategory, right? Harm to others. How?
Verbally.
What'd you say?
Verbally.
Right. Physical. Yeah, you cut somebody off, you're mad at them, you honk on the horn, you do. I heard there were some others that I.
Curse.
Emotional? Okay, emotional. Cursing, yeah. Name calling. Putting somebody down. So, you know, I work with very angry parents, and they're creating parenting agreements because I mediate custody disputes. So people are a little annoyed. And, you know, they're writing agreements for how they're going to get their children back and forth so they don't have to go to trial. And one of the standard clauses in most of those is that they're not going to verbally disparage the other person within earshot of their children. That's just a standard one because it happens all the time, even without kind of knowing it. Think about a situation where you're angry. I know what happens to me is even if I'm really trying so hard, it's just a vibe. It's in the room now. Even if I just say, it's just loaded with anger, right? Or if I don't speak, it's just loaded with anger. So it's so infectious. It just takes over the entire atmosphere. All right, so this harm to others is verbally, with judgment, physical, emotional, cursing, verbal. Okay, and we have impatience is like a breeding ground. It supports hostility, mistakes, stress, harm to others. It also immediately disappears your good mood or your state of mind. Whatever state of mind you were in before the impatience, it's gone. Yeah. It's a self what?
Self-centered.
Okay. Yeah, talk a little bit about that into a mic. Because I do have some people have told me they're at home watching. So what Jeff said is it's self-centered.
I mean, I know patience. And I grew up in New York. I was born impatient.
Uh-huh.
And
you were born impatient.
And I'm better at it, but like the lights on Western Boulevard are not right and they drive me nuts.
Uh-huh.
And so, but it's my own, I'm thinking about, it's like the opposite of what we learn here to like care for others.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only, when I get really impatient, I'm only concerned about my own needs and I lose sight of what everyone else, and that's harming in a way. That's the way I kind of reason that out.
Okay. Well, yeah. And you know, what happens then when your focus is just on yourself, just like this list? I mean, what are some things that happen when you're focusing just on yourself?
You end up harming us. Well, for me, personally, I end up harming others.
Oh.
Gotta say it again.
For me, I end up harming other people.
Okay. All right. And so you're then creating negative karma, negative actions.
Yeah.
So you're just destroying any... Pass the mic right behind you. Any potential to create positive virtue.
I mean... I think the other thing is that when I get really frustrated, it like tends to reinforce my expectations in a way that isn't really constructive.
Okay, so it like kind of alters your negative expectations?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you give us an example?
Well, like I think like if I'm traveling in traffic one morning or something like that, right, mm-hmm. and I'm late, and I get really, really frustrated at something totally out of my control, well, then, like, it's just going to, I mean, I'm still, like, I'm grasping on, oh, my God, I'm going to be late. But then I'm also, like, putting so much emphasis on this thing that might not even be important.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, really builds up that expectation that I really need this thing, which mm-hmm. I might not. Like,
right.
Oh, okay, I might be late. Who cares?
Right, right. Just kind of... Right, and it also it reinforces that view of the other person as being bad or in your way or whatever it is
right.
that's going on in our head. Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking of the specific example of you're waiting, you're trying to get through that light. You've already been through three light changes, and you're like,
yeah.
I bet it's going to take another five light changes to get through. You know how you think that,
yeah.
and sure enough, it happens where somebody gets stalled up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so nobody can get through, and you're like, yeah, I knew it.
Yeah.
And you know, it resets your expectation. Like,
right.
okay, well, maybe the next light I'm going to go through, and then it doesn't,
right.
and you get upset when you normally wouldn't.
Right, exactly. And so your peaceful state of mind is gone, and now all that you're seeing around you is reinforcing this negative thing going on in your head. Yeah.
It seems to me like impatience is this global manifestation of that pervasive suffering.
Mm.
You know, there's this complete unsettling of
mm-hmm.
everything you are, anything you think, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in that state of mind, everything is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? It's like running down a hill. You can't stop that momentum that you've built up. And in one of my office jobs, the secretary was really, really struggling. And my other coworker and I were talking about it. And what started to happen, I could see it in him, is that he started to see all of her faults. You know, every day it was like, and she did this, and she did that, and she did that. And I said, you know what? I mean, now we're not seeing anything positive about her at all. And he goes, oh, you're right. I said, let's just, before, you know, because he was ready to fire her, I said, before we take that step, mm-hmm. let's just stop and see if there's, you know, if there's positive too, you know, because the negative was so clear, but it was just like what you're saying. Now it was this reinforcement
yeah.
of it rather than let's try to keep it in perspective. Yeah.
The word that I was thinking of was self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen a lot just in personally in my life when things like the past 2 years, like everything in the world went wrong, right? And I was very negative, and that's actually what brought me to the center. Very negative. It was like one thing after another was going wrong, and it became a self-fulfilling prophecy because I was like, well, what else was going to go wrong? So basically, I was seeking out what else was going to go wrong in my life instead
yeah.
of the positive things that I could be grateful for.
Yeah.
So everything was going wrong, and I was also becoming more impatient, and I was acting and probably making a lot of other things go wrong myself,
yeah.
you know?
Okay, so that's good. Then in our impatience, we usually are speeding up things, right? So we don't have as big a view. our view narrows. We don't see all the options or possibilities. I mean, and this is not even like a negative impatience, but just like Geshla talks about this time that he was at the airport and they told him he couldn't bring this one bag or something, that he didn't know where to get the other bag, and he ran out and ran all the way down to buy this special bag and come back, and he didn't realize that he could have bought it just right there in the airport because he got that tension around being impatient. Your vision narrows. We all know that. You know, you're not in that zone anymore.
That's what I was going to say, is that you get agitated when you're impatient. Mm-hmm. And when you're agitated, it sort of, you know, short circuits your brain. And
right.
You're not open to other possibilities.
Right, exactly. So I'll say short-sighted. And that covers so many things. I mean, short-sighted, like I was describing about the secretary, short-sighted, like Geshla's experience trying to get a bag. It feeds on itself.
I'm not sure where it fits, but attachment makes me impatient, but the impatience like solidifies the attachment.
Yeah. Do you want to give an example?
Like very recently, yesterday, I was trying to go to the Panthers football game.
Uh-huh.
And hadn't been there and didn't know where to park, and it was horrible. So so I got in the wrong line and was stuck in traffic. The game started. I'm still in my car trying to find a place to park and
mm-hmm.
getting really, really impatient and upset. And so I was really attached to being in the stands a little early, you know, before the game started.
Yeah.
But
that's a great example.
Yeah, I finally had to give up on being there when it started because that was in the past now. So it really didn't matter anymore. So,
Venerable Robina says, she's said this to us several times, that anger is what happens when attachment doesn't get what it wants.
Yeah.
And that's what I think you're describing, yeah.
Yeah. Can you say that again, just in case everybody wants to hear it?
Anger is what happens when attachment doesn't get what it wants.
Right. So that also kind of gives you a way to work with it a little bit, you know. Because I have 10 different things I want to say. So we're going to do the same list for patience, but then there's a lot of really interesting examples of how you can start to unhook some of these things. So we're going to work on that. I took Geshla once to New Orleans years ago when he first came to this country at Christmas time. And in New Orleans, it's like this. This is our winter time. Humid and, I get to wear a sweatshirt. Wow. This is chilly. And in City Park, people put up these incredible lights in the live oaks, and there's all this Spanish moss, and it looks so cool. So you turn off your lights and you drive through there, and it's become very popular, and it was before all these other parks did these lights, and the line to get in is like miles long, and he could not believe the line of cars waiting to get in. He goes, look how patient. And everybody was incredibly patient. It's like when there's something that you want, like there's certain things you can be so patient for. But then there's other things. I mean, nobody would have sat in that line for something else. But they knew they were going to be in the line. They wanted this event. So they all just sat there in this long, long line. If they had to sit in the line like that for some an accident or something, it was not going to happen that patiently or calmly. Okay, so now, this is a list of what impatience supports. Impatience supports all of these negative things that we've just discovered. I mean, and again, like I said, we're experts at this. This is not news to us. It's just nice to hear that we are all in the same boat together. Oh, yeah. Okay, so that's what impatience supports. Now we're going to talk about what patience supports. Okay. Okay.
I'll repeat it. Harmony.
Tolerance.
Okay.
Tolerance.
Empathy.
Empathy.
Calm.
Calm.
Love.
Gives you time for logic.
It gives you time for logic.
Gives you time for logic, which can lead to all kinds of things like options, right? Solutions, more wisdom, growth, insight. Okay, I'm going to put this arrow to like increase relationship.
You can't really have any of the, you can't do any of the six perfections if you don't have it, but it's one of them.
Okay.
You can't, if you have patience, then the other, some of the other six perfections work. Like, if you're patient, you can be generous. If you're patient, you can joyously persevere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read that once. It always stuck with me. It's kind of, they all interdependent.
Right.
So.
And so it also supports the ground for us creating merit and for being virtuous and create. I mean, impatience does the complete opposite. It's very hard to be creating positive merit and virtue when you're impatient. It just destroys that field entirely. I mean, I always think of things in metaphors. So, I mean, if that was a field that you were sowing, that's gone. You are not sowing any positive seeds with impatience. So patience creates the ground for virtue. Yeah.
I saw a quote recently, patience marries time to eternity, and I really liked that because it implies a lot of expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And within that expansion or eternity, it's like all things are possible.
I love that. They also say, you know, karmically they say that patience is one of the things that creates a good-looking person in the next life, you know. So, but because, you know, one of the things that patience also supports and increases is people wanting to come around you. Nobody wants to, I mean, you know, you go to the store where there's a couple different clerks and one, you know, is really short-tempered and nasty. You do not stand in that person's line usually, right? I've walked away like, okay, I'll come back later. Right? So patience supports people liking you, people wanting to be around you. It's attractive. I'll tell you another Geshe-la story. You know, I introduced him to this videotape I had. This, again, when he first came to this country. I thought he might like this videotape of Mother Teresa's life. And later, you know, one of the things he told me, he was still struggling with his English, but he said, oh, she's not very good looking. I said, no, she's not very. And he said, is that ugly? I said, well, you wouldn't say she's ugly. He goes, okay, not good looking. Is that right? And I said, yeah. He goes, but everybody wants to be around her. I said, yeah. And he goes, and that's because of her patience, because of her bodhicitta, because of her love for everybody. It has nothing to do with what she looks like. He was very struck by that, you know. He goes, you can be this incredibly gorgeous person, but if you're not patient and loving to people, nobody wants to be around you. So it's attractive, and especially if you're trying to, in my job, if I lose my patience when people are, then it's just all over. It's just all over. So somebody has to be patient, and the trick is, how do you get to that place? Because we're all just human, you know, and there's going to be lots of things pushing our buttons and pulling us this way and that way. So we're going to do a meditation on these lists that we created. But first, let's just talk a little bit about what's the difference between just ignoring your feelings, suppressing your anger, and expanding patience. So when Geshe-la taught on this years ago, one of the things I really liked that he said was that it's kind of like, you know, after you've been sick a long time and your stomach has shrunk because you weren't able to eat, you're not going to be able to have a full meal that first day after you were sick. You're going to have to slowly expand it. So same thing like with patience. We're not going to be able to, the idea that we have of where we'd like to go, that's wonderful. But it's going to take time to stretch to that. And there's always going to be, you know, setbacks. And then just like in our meditation, when we notice that our mind has wandered, that's awesome. That's awesome. Same thing with our, now I'm impatient, you know. One of the things I was reading with in Pema Chodron's work is, and I really like this, I appreciate it a lot, is, you know, the patience with yourself. And just witnessing it, So last week we talked about that poem about falling in the hole. It's the same kind of thing, being able to give some space to it. So knowing that, okay, now I probably just shouldn't talk at all might be a good idea, and I'm just going to witness and watch everything that I'm feeling. So I think, you know, acknowledging that that's how you're feeling, that this is a difficult situation, it's very stressful, I'm late, I need to get there, people are waiting for me, I'm feeling a lot, all these things. And then giving yourself that space to kind of watch it all. Where in your body are you feeling that? What's going on in your body? What's going on in your head? What are you holding on to? Just like you had talked about, you had this idea of being in the stands, enjoying yourself at that moment, and that's not happening. So what is it that you're holding on to? And if you start with small things, you'll be able to see them a lot easier. Don't start with the Super Bowl. You know, I mean, I didn't mean to make another football analogy, but start with smaller things. So after Geshe-la did this teaching, I could not wait to lose my patience. I was so excited because I knew every time that I could stretch it, I knew that I was going to be growing and getting stronger. It's like going to the gym, and I knew there were going to be plenty of opportunities. And I just couldn't wait, you know. I mean, that's why I want you all to get that excited. Like when you leave here, to be so excited about the next thing that's going to challenge your patience, or that you will actually lose your patience, because that's where you grow from it. It's not, you know, in some chilled out coffee shop and just having a nice time. It's when somebody's pushing your buttons. So you start with something simple that you know that you can catch before it's arisen. Something small. And for me, what it was I think that very night, my dog woke me up for the third time to go out. And I was just about to lose my patience. And then I remembered these disadvantages. And I remembered something else Geshe-la said, which is also what you said. It's already happened. It's already happened. It's, you know, it's this whole thing about spilled milk. It's happened. So I can't now make the dog not wake me up. She has woken me up. If I lose my, this is why you go through the list. If I lose my patience, this means it's going to be stressful. I'm going to have a harder time getting back to sleep. Now me and the dog are going to be upset. And I'm going to completely lose my good state of mind and my sleep. And I had the chance to actually expand my patience a bit. So I took the dog outside. I just looked up at the stars and sang a little song and then brought her back in and went to sleep. And I was so happy. I was so happy. Kim, did you want to say something?
Yeah, hold on. You know, while we're working on ourselves, I think it's important to remember that we are working on ourselves in context. So we are in an extremely impatient country. And sometimes, you know, if we're going to do this, I think it's important to remember that not everybody is going to understand what we're doing. Not everybody is going to be happy with us. I mean, it does take courage to do this, because if you're a patient person, there's going to be this has happened to me multiple times. I'm slowed down. I'm okay with what's happening. And there are people who are not happy. They're not happy with me. They're like, you know, you need to move fast. You need to be angry with this person. Come on, let's go. And if you want to do this, there are going to be people who are not going to be happy with you. So in a way, you do have to kind of also be courageous, especially in our culture. Mm-hmm. You know, can I go to Mexico? It's a lot easier to be patient, really. But here, wow. Even not New York, okay? The whole culture is one of push, push, push as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. Do not be impatient. Be impatient. Be impatient. That's the way to be. You know, mm-hmm. that's the goal. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it not everybody's going to like you. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But you have to kind of be courageous and recognize that's going to happen.
Well, there'll be lots of, yeah, I mean, it's kind of the opposite of what I was saying, that people will be drawn to you. People might want more of your impatience if they like to complain, you know.
And they do. Yeah, they do. And when somebody's not doing that, mm-hmm. some people will be saying, oh, that's cool. But other people will not be happy. And just, I think it's good to just recognize, know that that's going to happen and be okay with it.
Yeah.
No, you just made me think of another.
Can you give him a mic? Hold on.
You just made me think of another advantage of patience. Because I've done this with work with some people. It diffuses people.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, and that's for my own sanity, that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this one lady at work, she's all hyper all the time and negative, and I'm just helping her. Like, mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, it was a Friday, so I'm getting out, so it's easy to be in a good mood. But mm-hmm. every time she was negative, I'm just like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. It just diffused her.
Right.
And that's a benefit.
There's a difference between trying to change that and staying where you are and hearing somebody. Because the more you try to change somebody and get them to come over to where you are in patient land, they're just going to dig in their heels because they don't feel received. So, you know, listening to somebody is a huge gift. Doesn't mean you have to have their state of mind. Doesn't mean that you agree with them. And that's the thing, and I'm always teaching mediators that listening does not mean agreeing. It means you've received them. And receiving somebody is a huge gift, and it automatically de-escalates things, usually. But, it, you know, so when looking at our own state of mind when we're about to lose our patients, what I want to kind of underscore is the importance of not just suppressing it. You know, to be really honest with yourself and honest with how you're feeling. And it's okay, you know. We're going to have 3 gazillion things a day that are going to test our patients. And you'll have all kinds of tricks that you develop to try to keep expanding that. All right, so let's pick one. Pick one that you would like to work on in your meditation right now. I'll give you, I mean, that may be hard. If it's hard, I'll give you one of mine. You can work on mine. But pick one that, again, it's not an impossible one. It's something that, do you know what I mean? I don't want you to go to the world's worst one. Start with just something. You can work up to that. You can meditate at home. Your homework would be to meditate on the holidays. Anything stressful about the holidays?
Like everything.
Yeah, okay. So now let's start with something that you think might, something that might push your buttons soon. Okay, that you think that you can have success with, like I had success with my dog. Because the only way I think that people change is by having success. You have success at something, and then you can build on the next thing. So again, when I'm mediating and people want to be able to, you know, spend holidays together with their kids, and it's just impossible at that point, we focus on what would be a first step, making a phone call back and forth. You know, that's not a hostile phone call. Getting information back and forth. Because if you have success with the small things, you're going to be able to build on that. So start in your meditation with something that you'd really like to be able to have more patience on, whether it's in the traffic or with somebody at work who's a little annoying. Something like that that you think you can accomplish. So get back into your meditative posture. And I want you to pick one, and then you can move to others. But start by really seeing yourself in that situation. So first, I'm sorry, take a few deep breaths. Just get back in touch with your breathing. Feel your center lower to that area right below your navel, so that's where you're breathing from. And check in with your body. Where is anything that's tense? Try to let it go. Just talking about tension and our body reacts. And as we let the tension go, we have more ability to think and create and investigate. And the good thing is we can use everything around us to help us grow. So now take a situation that you regularly encounter or that you anticipate encountering where you have been or could easily be impatient, where you can practice your patience. So take a look at that situation as though you're in it right now. And before you visualize losing your patience, look at the antidote, the disadvantages in that particular situation for losing your patience. If you lost your patience, what would it lead to? What could it possibly lead to? Try to follow some of those ripple effects of losing your patience in all directions. Now, rewind to that moment that you're just about to lose your patience and imagine that you have the time to stop it and to just investigate, that you have the patience, you have the time to be patient with yourself, with the confusion that you're feeling, and you can look and see it. What is it that you're holding on to? So you're not ignoring these feelings, you're giving them some space so that you can look at them. So that you can wait before acting. You can notice where in your body you're feeling impatient. And now look at what patience supports in that situation. If you expand your patience in that situation, what other things arise for you unique to that moment, that scenario? And follow those ripple effects as far as you can. And now, if you'd like, take another situation, another scenario that's a little challenging, that tests your patience. I'll give you a few minutes to do the same thing, looking at the disadvantages of impatience for you and the advantages of maintaining patience. Okay, and now I'd like you to get into groups of four. Just find a group of four, and that way you'll all have enough time to talk and just kind of process both the advantages and disadvantages and any challenges that you particularly noted. And talk among your, introduce yourselves and then talk with your foursome, and then we'll come back as a larger group and talk. Okay? So you have about 10, 15 minutes for that. Okay, there's two here and there's two over there. Okay, so... You know what, then? Why don't one of you come here and one of you go into that group so it's not six? Okay. You want a chair? You can put your chair over. Do you have a fifth, okay? Okay, and come on back to the group now. Seems like there's some good discussions going on. Sorry to interrupt them. Anything y'all want to share with the larger group or with folks at home? Everybody got very quiet all of a sudden. I heard a couple of good things. You know, I heard a lot about problem solving so that you aren't in the situation that tests your patience. That's awesome. If there's something that you can do to reduce the aggravation that creates you to lose your patience, by all means. A lot of it, that patience then is about creating that space. Remember, we're talking about creating that space so you can investigate. And if there's something that you can do, like I overheard somebody saying, you know, get up earlier so that there's not so much rushing, because impatience is a lot about rushing. And I heard this quote, well, it's not an exact quote, but it's attributed to a teacher, which says, whichever of the two occurs, be patient. And what he means by the two is either pleasure or pain. So we usually just think of impatience with something annoying us. But his whole point is that rushing towards something or away from something is with both sides. So when we're very excited and very happy about something, we're rushing. And his whole point was to slow it down a little bit so you have more space than you can think. We're rushing towards the Panthers game, which then creates a problem. So I really like that. Whichever of the two occurs, be patient. Be patient with the happiness that you're feeling and the excitement. You see kids who don't have that ability yet on Christmas Day. Oh, my God, right? So it's the same thing. We're really like that inside. So I like that. It's about needing to be stiller. So what are some other things that help? Because the way I see it is kind of two categories. The things that we can do when we notice, oh, I could lose my patience in this situation, but now I'm going to think about, you know, the advantages, disadvantages, recognize this is a chance to kind of expand. Because we haven't lost our patience yet. We've caught it. We're not even, we know we're close, but we're not on that cusp yet. So that's one thing. Much harder when impatience has already arisen, like I'm getting impatient with this, and I guess it's on. It feels like it keeps going off and on. When it's already arisen, then that's when it's harder. That's when we're already in the grip of our impatience, and we, you know, for me, it's like, okay, and this is when I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm going to try to create a little space for myself so I can, I'm not going to ignore how I'm feeling. I'm not going to suppress it, but I'm going to watch things now. What are some other things that help? Yeah.
You know, we had a kind of an interesting discussion because we were talking about what happens when you're in the presence of someone who's really angry and that person is part of your family. So you're not going to be getting away, you know, because mm-hmm. this is your family. You're going to interact with this person today, tomorrow, and as long as you're with them. So, you know, what can you do when you're in the presence of someone who's really angry? And interacting with them is very difficult because they're not
in a state of logic. So doesn't do a lot of good to introduce concepts that we're talking about here.
Oh, no.
Because they're not going to buy any of that, and you're just going to make the situation worse. So we talked about, you know, different things of how you can not help to not escalate that person,
mm-hmm.
And not escalate yourself,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't become part of increasing the anger that's can fill the room when somebody's
right.
super angry. And to recognize that that is a lot right there. That's mm-hmm. a lot right there.
Mm-hmm.
And to recognize that these small pieces of not contributing to an escalation, and to just recognize what you can do for yourself.
That's creating space.
Yeah.
So even if you can't physically get away from somebody,
right.
you're creating the space by not contributing to the tug of war that's going on. And certainly I would never advocate trying to teach somebody about the things that you're learning here.
Exactly. This is not the time.
Yeah.
It's not a teaching moment.
No.
You know, but with children, when you have children, when children are involved, there's very little time for space,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's because they're at you all the time, especially young children. They do not leave you alone. So sometimes the best that you can do is to not escalate a situation and to be happy, you know, that you didn't do that.
So I just want to be clear. When I say space, I don't necessarily mean that you're leaving the room, but, you know, that creating the mental space sometimes in yourself, you know, just standing right there in front of somebody and counting your breaths. Whatever it takes. I mean, there's a whole reason why people say, I'm going to count to 10. You know, just for me, it's like not opening my mouth at a certain moment. Receiving what somebody's saying, you know. I can also go to the bathroom. Most people will let me go to the bathroom. Maybe kids might not. But sometimes, seriously, I mean, that's why whatever tricks are up your sleeve, so that you can maintain whatever state of mind it is that you want, or not get to this far reaches that you don't want to go to. What are some other things? So you've heard what Kim has been saying. What are some other things? And that's also being in the presence of somebody else who may have lost their patience or are very challenging, that might really push your buttons. And if you want to, you can watch a Saturday Night Live skit on a Thanksgiving dinner. They have a really funny skit about people about to lose their patience with family members at dinner and their trick to do that. Yeah.
So something that was said a few Sundays ago, I am not exactly sure which, but it was like realizing that they have their own neuroses of the mind and things that are going on in their mind, and kind of walking in the other person's shoes, that sometimes has helped me, because I can see like where I've been in situations like that, like, for example, in traffic, you know, when someone cuts you off and I'm starting to get angry or frustrated, realizing, well, I've done that too before, because maybe they have somewhere important they got to be. Maybe they have like an emergency, or maybe they're worried they're going to get fired. So kind of playing that tape through. And the other part of playing that tape through is playing through like, okay, if I were to react this way, what's going to happen in this situation? Kind of like what we were talking about before, because if I'm able to play that through and see, like, what's going to happen, then I can react a lot differently than if I'm just reactive to everything, like a volcano exploding
right.
all the time.
Exactly. That's why this meditation has been effective. You know, that's why this meditation exists. And you can use it for other sorts of things as well as patience and impatience. But it's reviewing the advantages and the disadvantages. That's the crux of it. And so you can start to develop your own list. You can expand, add on to it, go into other areas besides anger, you know. But starting to really work with those and see what helps you and what doesn't help. It's your list. And one of the things that I was reading too is, you know, and I think I heard somebody mentioning this, even once you've lost your patience to some degree, the ways, the use of humor, you know, making fun of your own loss of patience, can kind of de-escalate what's going on right then and there. I was working with teachers years ago, and this teacher talked about how, she had really lost her patience with her kids at the end of the day and yelled at them or something. And then the next day when she came in, she said something to them and apologized, and they all clapped. they were so, you know, they were just amazed that here this teacher was standing in front of them talking about what a difficult day she had had and how she had just kind of lost it in front of them. And they all clapped. It was just this amazing thing. That's not exactly using humor. But I think as adults, often we do use humor in a way that then somebody almost would do the same thing. They'd clap because they see that, you know, yeah, you stepped in it. Now you're making a joke about it. And it just changes the entire atmosphere. The other thing is, you know, like all of us are saying, is to be patient with yourself. Geshe-la talks a lot about how uses the analogy of a jacket, that a jacket is not going to bring you warmth in the middle of July. It's only when you're cold that the jacket offers the antidote to your coldness. It offers you liberation from coldness. So the same thing, the only moment that you're going to develop patience or develop a way out of this samsaric circle that we're talking about is through these problems. That when they arise, that's the moment that there's liberation from it. The moment that there's anger and all these different issues that arise, the door away from those exists in that moment. So don't beat yourself up if you didn't find it. We're all struggling with it, but it's also, don't ignore it. Don't say, I'm never going to be impatient. I'm just going to live in this little bubble. And you know, no, it's those moments that are challenging to us that liberation exists. So I hope you're as excited as I was after he talked about going out today and tomorrow and meeting those moments that really challenge you, because that's where you're going to stretch. And we're talking about some of the most extremely difficult ones, you know, the ones where you can't get away from an angry, yelling person. That's like the Super Bowl. So I would say, you know, keep those in mind, and we'll talk about those next week during our practice session. And also, though, start this week on the ones that you know you can probably have some success with. You know, map those out for you so that we can then talk about how those ones will lead to the Super Bowl. But just throw the ball around a little bit and see that you can actually expand into those areas. Any questions or thoughts before we end? So next week is our party. Bring your elf costumes. Now, it's, you know, we always have a practice day, and this module is particularly short, and because it's the holidays and everything, the practice day is going to be next Monday. So we'll have more time to do some meditations and conversations. We'll make it fun. I'll see if I can remember to bring chocolate. And, and we'll try to maybe even get into some groups to problem solve, maybe some particularly challenging family scenarios and what antidotes you can use around those, okay? Yeah, 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 yeah. We can do this, we can do this. And you'll see if there's some, you know, some realistic goal, bring in some realistic goal that you would like to set for the holiday of what you're going to change, not anybody else out there, nobody in your family. But, you know, like I had to have this outpatient procedure and they gave me propofol. Wow, what a drug. And I mean, I hadn't eaten for a couple of days, so I went into Whole Foods. I thought, I don't know if I can go into Whole Foods at lunch hour to get food. I'm so out of it. Oh, but I was just like floating. Nothing bothered me. I was just like in la la land. Everybody looked beautiful. And I thought, if I could be like this all the time, you know? But that leads to real problems, right? No, but if my mind could be that patient and that, like, everything is beautiful kind of feeling. So sometimes what I'll do right before I get into a really difficult situation is I'll try to remember that feeling, like, oh, yeah, that what I was, it was drug-induced, but, you know, at least I have that memory. Maybe I can just call that up, you know? So it's possible. All right, so let's spend a minute now dedicating the merit created by coming here, getting yourself to the center alone creates huge merit. You know, merit is just, you know, every action creates something, positive, negative, or neutral. Well, coming here, getting yourself here, thinking about this topic, having wishes to increase your patience, to have more harmony in your life and those around you, and looking at the ripple effects, that's all very positive. Talking with others, sharing your ideas, helping them out, listening, huge. So now what we do is we dedicate where we want these to ripen. These are like seeds that will ripen surely at some point. And you're the one who can decide where they will ripen. If they're going to, where in your garden you want them to ripen. They'll benefit you, and as a result, they'll benefit others. And see them ripening to help your mind state now, and how this one thing leads to another. One moment of consciousness leads to the next, to the next, to the next, to complete enlightenment. It's just like that. Even the train agrees. And thank you very much for your patience with me and your energy for each other. I appreciate it.